State at Wake was great. It was great for a lot of reasons. Wolfpack needed a good road win. Wake Forest presented that opportunity. They had to do it with, just going to say, not minimal, but limited contribution from Terquavion Smith, who was saddled with foul trouble. I think played six first-half minutes, but otherwise was a very efficient, effective player in the second half. But, man, what a DJ Burns performance. State also played nine guys in the game. That's a lot. They used their depth. And they've got players coming back. Actually, I don't think it was nine, but like maybe eight. But they have guys coming back at some point. Brian Geisinger, Pack Pride, Devil's Den, too many. Brian Geisinger, League Pass Lair, my friend. All right, let's start in with State, and then we will get to the Blue Devils. I thought that's a good win because I think Wake is good, and I think Wake is an NCAA tournament team. What was your view of the game?
It was, well, first off, it was kind of just like a classic Tobacco Road game. It was really fun. Both offenses played excellent in this game and, you know, kind of doing different things. But Wake is a good team. They're really well coached. Steve Forbes is like an A-level coach. And, you know, it is a little unfortunate that it kind of feels like their resume, you know, is trending to be just like a little too light. You know, once again, I know there's still, you know, games to be played and stuff like that, but to get a win on the road, what, the third road ACC win that State had this month,
yep,
including the Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech, and for State to do it, I mean, they're down two starters. You know, Jack Clark and Dusan Mihorcic are still not playing, and to have Terquavion Smith, you know, basically sit for half the game, essentially, with foul trouble, and for them to go in there and pull out the win was it was really, really impressive. They could have let go of the rope at so many times in the second half. You know, they're down 9 points, they're down 10 points. You know, Terquavion's in foul trouble. Terquavion picks up his fourth foul. And you could even see early in the second half when Terquavion had three fouls. This is something that Steve Forbes did a ton last season with Jake LaRavia and Alondis Williams, but if you have someone in foul trouble, a guard, they're just going to have whomever that person is guarding come up and set a screen for one of their star players.
Right.
And you could see them try to have Monsanto go up with Terquavion Smith on him, set screens for Cam Hildreth, and then attack the switch. They were trying to get him to pick up that fourth foul early, or at least, you know, be able to score on him if he was playing passive defense. And so just like some clever coaching there, I thought, from Steve Forbes. But just what DJ Burns was able to do one-on-one was incredible in the game. I mean, Gold, you know, like, I mean, you know how math works. It's not easy to score 31 points when you don't attempt a three and you make only three free throws. You know,
right.
like you've got to be really surgical down on the block. And Burns just absolutely smoked Matthew Marsh and Davian Bradford in single coverage. Especially Marsh in the second half. Like, if you go back and rewatch it, and I mean, we could maybe even talk about this just very briefly. But Wake Forest, with about 5 minutes left, finally blinked, and they sent a double team at DJ Burns, and it turns into an immediate skip pass to LJ Thomas, who continues to make winning plays, and he splashes a corner three. So DJ Burns had all the answers, man. He was incredible. Saturday and Winston.
How did he not score 30 points a game in the Big South? It will be forever a mystery to me. Brian Geisinger is here on the Adam Gold Show. This is going to sound like a slight, but it's not. I love Terquavion Smith. I'm not sure that he's their best player. Jarkel Joyner, to me, settles everything down. I think he's a more efficient player as well. And again, I think Terquavion has a higher ceiling than anybody else on their team. But I'm not sure. Maybe the word I'm looking for is most important player. I think Jarkel has settled everything.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, like Terquavion is their, you know, he's their best, most talented player. And, you know, he's going to be a top 20 pick in the draft. Jarkel is probably, what, 3-4 years older than Terquavion.
Right.
And you know, he's incredible though. Like, he is an unreal leader. I thought he and Burns, I thought their fingerprints were all over kind of the team, this team not giving up Saturday. And it's a testament to the coaching staff. It's a testament to everyone on the team. But I think those two guys, I think their attitudes have sort of like rubbed off on the rest of this team. Joyner, he just senses the moment, as well as I think any sort of guard that I've seen come through state in some time. Like, he just has this great idea of when he needs to push the ball in transition. You know, if the half-court offense is maybe getting gummed up a little bit. This was a big, I thought, in the Georgia Tech win. Well, all of a sudden, he just started kind of forcing the issue, you know, and he's so talented, he doesn't turn the ball over either. So you can trust him in those situations. And so I thought he was able to run his way into some baskets against Wake Forest. And then he hit two huge pull-up shots the final 8 minutes of this game out of the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. One was a three when Tyree Appleby went under the screen on an after timeout play. And then there was another, like a minute or two before that, there was another sort of like drag screen action with DJ Burns. And look, Wake Forest, they play their centers deep. Like, they drop their centers. And so the pull-up shots were there. And, you know, Terquavion got to them early, and then it was Jarkel late in the game to sort of help seal it. But, I Jarkel plays both sides of the court. He doesn't make mistakes. And he hits tough shots.
Yep. I thought the shot he hit before the end of the half was, even though the lead got to what it got to in the second half, I thought that shot he hit right before the half was a, like, underrated huge part of State's ability to come back. I mean, basically just cut the lead to whatever it was, six or whatever it was. But it just felt like that mattered to me going into the locker room. I don't want to read too much into Duke's drubbing of Georgia Tech 86-43 because Tech was missing one of their best players and Duke obviously played well. But it's really hard to overlook a 43-point win. But just drilling it down a little bit, the fact that for the third straight game, Duke shot not just a respectable number, a good number from three-point range. 39% in the last two, and over the last three games, they're just over 40% from three-point range. I don't expect that necessarily to continue, but if they can get somewhere around 37%, aren't they, like, a threat?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, ultimately, I think they were due for some positive shooting performances because I think they had kind of I don't even necessarily have the math to back this up other than to say, I think they kind of underperformed based off the talent and the shot selection they had, you know, for chunks of the season. I think a guy like Tyrese Proctor, who you can look at and see what he does from the free throw line and you know his profile, what he was able to do before he got to Duke as a shooter. You know he's not like a 20-whatever percent three-point shooter. You know, it's like it doesn't mean he's going to make 55% of his threes for the rest of the season, but he's certainly going to – he has the ability to shoot it better. Duke has guys in the rotation that can shoot, even without a talented player like Derek Whitehead, who showed the ability to hit from deep too.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, when they're able to hit like that, what it can do to open things up in the paint for Kyle Filipowski, like, he doesn't need a ton of room to get to his spots, but the more space he has, the better. And if you can also then leverage some of that shooting to get Derek Lively going downhill in the pick and roll for dives and for finishes at the rim. Yeah, the shooting complements those guys perfectly. And I do think it also helps, you know, you get someone like Roach back in the lineup.
Jeremy Roach was 4 of 7 from three-point range. That mattered, too.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you know, you have an extra ball handler, a guy that can do some stuff one-on-one. I think he's been a kind of a so-so three-point shooter for his career, but it's not like he's a negative as a shooter, and he can certainly set guys up for good looks, too. So, yeah, it's huge. I think they should be encouraged with that. Mm-hmm. I know Tech's not a good team, but, like...
No, they're bad.
They're bad, but they do make things like they're a weird team, too. It's like, you know, when Tech and State played the other week, they played a triangle in two. Like, Josh Mastner will try anything. Sure. Like, he's just throwing stuff at the wall right now. So I don't know. Getting that win, I do think is something to like can be a little proud of it.
Derek Lively hit a three. Derek Lively came to Duke with the reputation of being able to do that. I don't know if that's going to be part of what Duke is going to showcase going forward, but it does make me kind of wonder what we're going to see on Saturday. I realize I'm completely blowing past Duke Wake tomorrow, but when we get to Saturday and Carolina comes in, are they going to have their two bigs on the court, like pull outside a little bit and make Carolina come out and guard them out there? Are we going to see something like that?
You know, I think we will see something like that, but my guess would be that Hubert Davis and UNC are fine if Derek Lively wants to, you know,
right,
try to like light them up from deep. I mean, they're going to want to keep, you know, Armando Bacot in a more conservative guarding position. That's how they guard pick and roll. You know, they're going to, if Derek Lively wants to take pick and pop threes, those shots are going to be there because they ice those looks on the side. And they drop Bacot when the screen is a spread look in the middle of the court. So like the shots are going to be there, and you know, just so happens if you know Lively wants to take and can make a couple of those, that would be a big deal. But yeah, I mean, if I were Duke, I would be trying to get Caleb Love involved defensively in the action as much as possible. I don't like his defense. I don't like his screen navigation. And yeah, I don't know, Gold. Are you just ready for people to? I know at some point in the middle of this coming week, everyone's just going to start acting loopy here in the triangle. Like everyone's just going to start.
We haven't gotten there already.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm in like maybe a little bit of a bubble, and I'm excited for Duke Wake tomorrow night.
Yeah.
But it does kind of feel like the Duke UNC game, especially at the end of last year, like it just brings out it just brings out the dumb in a lot of people.
But I thought the rivalry was over. I thought that ended the rivalry. I thought both games ended the rivalry, which, of course, didn't happen. But
Right. Of course. It'll never happen. And, yeah, it certainly didn't after the end of last year. Though I do think it did. I do think the, like, triangle had some type of, like, collective trauma after the three-week stretch when they played twice in the span. Like, it was just. I don't know if we'll ever quite recover from
it. It's the biggest regular season game in ACC history, followed by the first ever Duke-Carolina meeting in the Final Four. Of course it was going to be cataclysmic, but it didn't end the rivalry, which was always comical to me. Real quick, before I let you go, not that I really want to spend any time talking about Virginia, because it makes my ears bleed, but Virginia's at Syracuse tonight. Is Virginia the, I shouldn't say the only, because I think there are others. Is Virginia the best bet at a, I don't know, 3 or 4 game stint in the NCAA tournament?
I still think UNC like has that in them too. I haven't like completely like abandoned that ship yet. But yeah, I mean, Virginia is really good. They're really good on both sides of the court. They have a lot more lineup versatility this season than they did a year ago. They can play these small ball lineups. Right now, they kind of need to figure out what they're going to do with Caden Shedrick, who's one of the more talented big guys in the ACC, but has basically been pushed to the margins of their rotation this year. But they've got shooters. They've got a guy in Reese Beekman who's one of the best two-way players in the ACC and is probably the best point of attack defender in the country. Yep. And they've got a guy, Ryan Dunn, who's a freshman forward coming off the bench right now that is starting to get more and more playing time. And he's a pretty special player, like a 6'7", 6'8", rangy forward. You know, everyone wants to give the DeAndre Hunter comparison. I think we should probably slow down a little bit that one. But Dunn is like a special athlete. He's blocking a ton of shots. And all of a sudden, he's starting to play above the rim. So he's giving them another dimension that they haven't had in a couple of years since Hunter left.
Since DeAndre Hunter.
In terms of having like kind of a, you know, a versatile, rangy, forward defender. And again, he's, you know, only just now cracking into the rotation. So they're deep, they're talented. I think them and UNC, I really think those are the two teams to have the chance to still, you know, They could get to a Final Four
All right, that's enough. That's enough of that. Nobody in this league is going to a Final Four. Brian Geisinger, at @BGeis_Bird, Pack Pride, Devil's Den, and more. Just follow him on Twitter to get all of it. Sir, we'll talk to you later. I appreciate it, man.
Of course, you guys. Take care.
You got it.